well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me today. Hopefully you are staying cool. We've got Larry Keene joining us from the National Shooting Sports Foundation here in just a moment. As we reported at Bearing Arms earlier this week, the NSSF is asking the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to make a change, to destroy the records that are more than 20 years old from FFLs that have gone out of business, as well as allowing FFLs that have been in business for 20 years or more to also destroy their records after 20 years rather than being forced to keep a hold of them forever and ever. Not only would this benefit the ATF and FFLs in terms of simply, you know, having more storage space, as the NSSF notes, this would also prevent the government from establishing a backdoor gun registry, which, of course, they're not allowed to do. So I want to get Larry's thoughts on that, as well as the latest, well, we're still waiting, honestly, to see what the parliamentarian will do in the Senate with the language regarding suppressors, short-barreled firearms, and any other weapons. But our fingers are crossed that we get a good ruling from the parliamentarian. We'll check in with Larry on that regard as well. Take a look and a listen. Larry, thanks very much for coming on the program. It's good to see you again, my friend.
Good to see you. And I have to say, the Red Sox have owned the Yankees this season so far. But, you know, it's still early. We haven't reached the All-Star game yet.
It is still early. And, yeah, there's a lot of games left to be played. So I'm not I'm not going to throw any shade the Yankees way. We'll see where things stand in September, maybe. But let's talk about what's going on with the ATF. So earlier this week, we reported on a letter that you sent to acting ATF director Dan Driscoll, basically asking for a couple of things, right? Relief for FFLs, but also some updated record keeping for the ATF, right? As of right now, the ATF is keeping a hold of all of these files of FFLs that have gone out of business, more than 20 years old. They're digitizing these files, right? Creating this permanent record. Yep. And NSSF wants to see that stop.
Well, so obviously record keeping requirements. When you go out of business as an FFL, you've got to send all of your 4473s and acquisition and disposition records, or sometimes referred to as bound books, to ATF, so that they can trace firearms, right? And until recently, until under the Biden administration, after 20 years, an FFL could dispose of old records after they're, you know, 20 years old. That changed as part of the frame or receiver rule, which had a lot of things in it that had nothing to do with frames or receivers. But I have, toward the Out of Business Record Center, which is part of the National Tracing Center. And this was a long time ago, and the volume of records was stunning then. At that time, they were getting something like a million and a half records a month. Now, they get 9 million records a month, every month, month after month, year after year. And to the point where there were so many records that the roof of the ATF building in Martinsburg, West Virginia, was collapsing, like literally caving in from the weight of all the records. They had to store records in boxes, in shipping containers, in the parking lot. They had to go out and get a second building nearby to house these records. They spend an enormous amount of money digitizing things now. So that, you remember back in the old days, used to be microfiche.
Mm-hmm.
And so every record from an FFL since 1968 that goes out of business is in this Out of Business Record Center. There are now over 1 billion records that are maintained. And now FFLs have to keep these records for the life of their business. Until they go out of business. So we don't think, this has been something I've talked to ATF about in the past many, many times. No business keeps records forever, right? Even IRS records, your tax returns, you have to keep them for 7 years. You don't keep them forever. No, but that's just not how business works. records age, their value diminishes over time. And, you know, the federal government shouldn't be any different. The National Tracing Center and the Out of Business Record Center does not exist to be archivists. The purpose of tracing is to provide real-time, actionable law enforcement intelligence that can help law enforcement, state, local, ATF, et cetera, solve crimes that are currently under investigation. Tracing an old gun and finding out that it was sold lawfully 40 years ago, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, makes no sense. It doesn't provide actionable law enforcement intelligence to solve crimes. All of the money that's being spent on this, wouldn't that be better used to put more agents on the street to stop crime from occurring in the first place? And it would certainly address the concern that Congress has because it's banned, or that gun owners have, that, you know, that at some point the government could create or use these records to create a database of gun owners. Mm-hmm. And they are scanned in. Now, they don't scan in the personal information because Congress has banned that, but it makes no sense. And we see, you know, ATF's budget, proposed budget is, you know, substantially less. Well, you know, you've got to use the tax dollars wisely. It makes no sense to keep records that old that do not provide law enforcement information that can be used today to solve crimes under investigation today.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't pass the cost-benefit analysis. Now, like, will there ever be a case where, like, you know, a trace of an old gun might be useful? I mean, you can count on one hand the number of times that happens, in my opinion, versus this, you know, just insane amount of money being spent. A billion records. I mean, it's unmanageable. It's very costly. It makes no sense. And I am hopeful, and I believe ATF will act on this recommendation. Again, it's just like, it's been a personal crusade of mine for, you know, probably close to 20 years. Since the first time I went to the record center, I was like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Like, they're ancient. They're not useful.
And I mean, as you say, man, you know, I've seen the stories about the records that are, you know, I mean, you've got mice that have eaten the pages. They're, you know, illegible at this point. What is the point of keeping a hold of these things, particularly if, again, there's such a backlog in digitizing them, and there's concern over digitizing these files to begin with, right? And then The other side of that is the burden that is placed on these FFLs, as you say, have to maintain all of this paperwork, you know, for as long as they're open for business, which is something that really no other business is forced to do by the federal government, right? So, yeah. I'm right there with you. And in terms, again, you know, using the tax dollars wisely, I mean, yes, you're right. The ATF is looking at about a $400 million budget cut from $1.6 to $1.2 billion. I got to ask you as well, Larry, while I got you here, you know, Pam Bondi was on Capitol Hill this week, and she was defending the proposal to merge DEA and ATF. Talking again about, you know, this would be a good use of our taxpayer dollars. We won't be duplicating efforts. I know you and I have talked about this before. Mm-hmm. This is one of the first times that I can recall in 20 plus years of covering the Second Amendment that Second Amendment groups and gun control groups are on the same page here. Yeah. Who actually wants this merger to happen? Because you've got groups like the NSSF that say, no, this is a bad idea. You've got groups like Giffords and Everytown say, no, this is a bad idea. Who thinks this is a good idea?
I really can't find anybody who does. And in fact, Attorney General Bondi is testifying today in the Senate. And I haven't had a chance to watch the testimony, but I've heard that, Senator Moran, the chairman of the Subcommittee of Appropriations, came out opposed to the merger. Senator Lindsey Graham apparently came out opposed to the merger. And we've heard that from others. I can't find anyone who thinks this is a good idea. My understanding is that DEA is not really in favor of this. I don't think ATF supports this. Again, as we talked before, this is not a new idea. This goes back at least to the 80s, the idea of merging ATF somewhere else and disbanding it. And it's never gone anywhere. It's never been a good idea. We are very much opposed. We want to have a relationship with our regulators from the industry perspective. you know, people we have, and DEA has no relationship with the industry. And I honestly don't want to see a supersized organization, whatever it's called, you know, wielded against the industry in the future, like occurred under the Dettelbach tenure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dangerous, both, you know, obviously to the industry, but also I think to gun owners as well. So we think it's a bad idea. Look, we're all in favor of, you know, shepherding the tax dollars wisely. I mean, we just talked about that with the record keeping and all of that. But we don't think this is a good idea, particularly, you know, like Attorney General Bonney talked about, like, guns and drugs go together.
I was just about to bring up that phrase.
Not in our mind, right?
Right.
Like guns are constitutionally protected. Product that commerce is constitutionally protected.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't like this association that, you know, the industry is somehow, or the Second Amendment is somehow connected to, you know, drug cartels.
Right.
You know, DEA and ATF work together all the time. It's important. You know, they work on deconflicting, but I don't think there's, you know, a benefit to merging the two. They have separate missions. Both are important. And I don't want to see them diluted. I mean, I hear problems that occurred, you know, in creating Homeland Security, where you merge different components into one, customs and et cetera. And it didn't work very well. And, you know, so we just don't think this is a good idea, respectfully.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you brought up that comment, because I wrote about that at Bearing Arms yesterday as well. It rankled me for the same reasons it rankles you, right? It makes gun ownership seem taboo and shady, right? Something that's got to be almost criminalized. And I know that's not the intent of Attorney General Bondi, but I think that is the effect, right? So I'm glad that that's one of your concerns as well.
Yeah, we used to hear, like, when it was like the idea was merge ATF into FBI, which even we heard as recently as this year. Mm-hmm. We used to always say, we don't want the FBI looking for a terrorist in every gun store. I don't want DEA looking for a drug dealer in every gun store. So,
yeah. I'm with you. Well, hopefully that is good to hear that Senator Moran and Senator Graham and others are voicing their objections to this. And hopefully this idea gets kind of shuffled off into nothingness and we don't hear much about it going forward. But I also want to ask you before we let you go here, and before I start sweating profusely, because it is so hot on the East Coast. ATF reform efforts. I mean, there's been a lot of good stuff coming out of the ATF, I think, under the watch of Dan Driscoll and Robert Sakata, the deputy director. In fact, I mean, just under the Trump administration, it's been night and day compared to what we saw with the whole of government attacks under Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I think if anything, there's people who are, you know, worried about the pace of things. Like, when are these rules going to get repealed, right? When are we going to see the formal publication of, and I don't even know where we are with, because they have announced, like, plans to repeal virtually all of the rules that were put in place under Biden's watch. But have we seen any of those repeal efforts published in the Federal Register yet?
No, but they are being worked on, as okay. I understand it. You know, we saw the two rulings came out yesterday. That's a little bit out of the blue, but like, I think you're going to see, you know, progress being made. You know, some rules are much more involved and complicated to deal with. And the, you know, look, the process of rulemaking is not fast, but I think, you know, over the course of this year, next 12 months, I think you're going to see a steady progress coming out of ATF.
What happened yesterday? What did the agency announce yesterday?
They put out two rulings on munitions and on dual-use barrels that used to not be allowed to be imported. So they put out two rulings on that. I think there will be regulations. The rulings will be adopted as regulations. That will take some time. But, you know, munitions are not ammunition. They're, you know, for training purposes, they can't be used for offense or defensive use in a firearm. So that, you know, that used to not be allowed to be imported. Now that's changed. And dual use barrels used to not be allowed to be imported if they'd ever been configured on a non-sporting firearm. Well, a barrel is a barrel is a barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And so Why should you not be able to import a barrel simply because at some point in the past it may have been on a non-sporting configuration? And once the barrel's in the United States lawfully, it can be used in any manner. Why should you restrict the use of it so long as you otherwise comply with, you know, the NFA, et cetera, and the GCA provisions? So that was, you know, a surprise. We were glad to see it. I mean, sort of, you know, niche, small things, but my understanding is things will be coming out as they are available, not necessarily, you know, so they're not going to just work on what's the top priority. They're trying to get a lot done. To their credit, I think we're going to see, I know we're going to see changes to the 4473. That's in process, and I think getting very close. I think we will see finally in the near future the what's called the firearms handler check, which would allow FFLs to conduct employment screening checks on current or prospective employees, something the industry has wanted for over a dozen years. So that's in process, and many other provisions or, you know, regulations. So I think people just need to be a little patient and give ATF and the chief counsel some time to work through all of the, you know, dotting the I's, crossing the T's, and the internal review that has to take place. But I think, you know, people will be pleased as we move forward. And I think we will see significant progress, you know, correcting bad rulings and undoing, you know, things like the pistol brace rule, engaged in the business and things like that. So it's going to take a little time. You got to be patient, but it is being worked on. It is in process. And we're, you know, we are so encouraged by the change in the tone and tenor, the refocus on the core mission. And, you know, this is something we talk about, like, you know, we don't like the idea of a merger, but we do agree ATF needs to be course corrected and refocused with strong leadership. And that strong leadership is in place between the acting director, the deputy director, the White House, the chief counsel, Rob Leiter. So, you know, they are fixing things. The relationship between ATF and the industry is much improved. It's back to being a partnership effort on compliance and on things like don't lie for the other guy. You know, as I've talked with ATF, what the industry wants is we want to know what the rules are, right? Like, right, what the rules are, so that we can be in compliance. You know, we'll quibble and argue and make our case about where we think, you know, how the rules should be or interpreted, et cetera. But at the end of the day, you need to know what the rules are so you can follow them and you can be compliant, right? Like,
absolutely. So,
and we don't want to be, you know, we're not the quote unquote the enemy. So there's definitely a new sheriff in town with President Trump and Attorney General Bondi, and with the new ATF leadership. It is a breath of fresh air, frankly. We just have this disagreement on the merger issue. So,
well, and thankfully, I think that there are going to be, you know, a lot of stakeholders who can weigh in on that. And it's not going to be simply the executive branch's decision, right, to do that. Congress has a role to play there as well.
Yes. I mean, it would require a vote of Congress. There is, in fact, for about a decade or so, a rider on the ATF budget that bars the use of any taxpayer funds to transfer the functions of ATF to any other department or ATF itself. And so that was, you know, put in place a decade ago, kind of the last time the merger thing sort of, you know, started picking up steam. So,
yeah. All right. Listen, Larry, we got to leave it there because I'm starting to sweat like a pig. So I got to let you go. But I'm sweating like the Yankees looking at the Red Sox just six games back here. They're not sweating. They're not sweating the Red Sox right now. All right. Listen, thank you as always for your time, man. And I look forward to doing this again very, very soon.
Happy to join you anytime. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Larry Keene joins from the National Shooting Sports Foundation here on Barry and Arms Cam and Company. My thanks to Larry for joining us on the program, and I am looking forward to speaking with him once again. It is good news, though, to hear that we've got some more reform efforts coming from the ATF here in the near future. Right now, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a case out of Missouri, where a Sturgeon man has been sentenced to probation for a shooting and a road rage incident. These are two separate incidents, by the way. Probation for both of them. According to court records, KOMOU reports that 20-year-old Jaden Gouldy pleaded guilty to charges against him in a plea deal. As part of that deal, prosecutors dropped some of the charges for both cases and then sentenced Gouldy to probation. Also sentenced to 70 days in jail with credit for time served in the road rage incident where he pulled a gun on someone. He was charged with second-degree assault, fourth-degree assault, and unlawful use of a weapon on Monday in connection with a shooting in Columbia, Missouri. Reportedly opened fire at several people. This was back in April. I said, I don't know why I said it was Monday. He hit one person in the leg, at least a bullet ricocheted and hit a person in the leg. He originally faced charges of first-degree assault, two counts of armed criminal action, unlawful use of a weapon, and fourth-degree assault. Same day, Gouldy also allegedly pulled a gun on someone who cut him off in traffic. He was charged with unlawful use of a weapon, fourth-degree assault in that case, and also had faced an additional charge of armed criminal action. Now, he is currently in jail for a 2024 parole violation, which makes this plea deal even more inexplicable. I don't know all of Jaden Gouldy's legal troubles, but if you're 20 years old, you're already in jail for violating previous probation, right? Or parole. It means you've been convicted of a crime before. Now you're charged with two acts of aggression involving a firearm, one of which shots were fired, and somebody was actually injured. Why did prosecutors offer this deal? Was it that none of the witnesses wanted to testify? Was there problems with the way police conducted the investigation? I cannot for the life of me fathom why you'd extend such an olive branch to somebody who has racked up some pretty significant charges in just a couple of years of adulthood. But there you go. In the case of Missouri versus Gouldy, I think Gouldy got the better of the state. On to today's Armed Citizen story. This was in, Wisconsin. Prosecutors in Caledonia, Wisconsin, say that a suspect who was involved in a robbery that resulted in his friend's death is now facing criminal charges, not only in conjunction with the robbery, but with the death of his friend. This happened a couple of months ago, but it took several weeks for this suspect to be brought into custody with the help of the U.S. Marshals Service. WISN in Wisconsin reports that Caledonia Police Chief Christopher Botch announced the arrest of Jerome Howell in Brown Deer, Wisconsin, the 24-year-old charged with felony murder and the death of his friend, Deshaun Elam, back on April the 7th. Prosecutors say that Howell and Elam had set up fake online sales of tools, hoping and planning on robbing whoever showed up to buy the non-existent items. So a would-be buyer eventually showed up at a Shell gas station there in Caledonia, planning on buying some tools. Instead, Howell and Elam allegedly got out of their vehicle, started chasing after the buyer. There's surveillance cameras that captured the footage of the buyer running away from a vehicle with Howell chasing him. The criminal complaint says, as this is happening, Elam's approaching the passenger side of the white truck that the buyer had shown up in. The occupant of the white truck opens the door. A shot can be heard, and Elam falls to the ground. Howell, according to prosecutors, then jumped in a car, took off. A couple of seconds later, the vehicle that Howell left in returns to the scene. Howell then takes something from Elam's body, then gets back into the car and drives off again. The criminal complaint said that Howell at some point called Elam's family to tell him that he had been shot. It was according to prosecutors, relatives of Elam, who actually told officers about the fake tool sales, advising that Elam and his friends had set up those sales online and then would rob the buyers. And then the relative believed that's why Elam and his friends were in Racine City, or Racine County, rather. So murder charges filed against Howell back in May, because Wisconsin law allows prosecutors to charge somebody with felony murder if a person dies while a felony is being committed. Howell is also charged with attempted armed robbery and being a felon in possession of a firearm, by the way. The armed citizen who protected himself has not been charged with any crime whatsoever. As long as he, you know, could legally possess that firearm, I'm guessing he's going to be in the clear, but we'll keep you up to date on any additional information. Howell, meanwhile, being held in the Racine County Jail under a $100,000 bond, he is due in court for a preliminary hearing on July 2nd.
Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place at the right time, when able to do the right thing. Four young men in Jacksonville, Florida, who helped save a dog and a house from a fire the other night. Four young guys just riding around their neighborhood on side-by-sides. Bryce Foster, Landon Clark, Luke Wilson, Dylan Bachman, just driving through the neighborhood. Bachman said, "We're just hanging out on a Saturday, riding around our neighborhood. We noticed a fire on the side of a house. Fire had already spread to a fence. It was making its way up to the attic of the residence. So the men ran to the home. Wilson and Bachman found a hose. They started spraying the flames with water. Foster says that he and his friend Landon ran around to the other side. They found another hose, started spraying the house down. And that's when they saw a dog trapped inside the home. Foster said, "I couldn't let the dog go. I have four dogs at home, and I'd hope someone would do the same for me if they saw my dog inside. So I actually pushed the window in." I mean, at that point, there's already damage to the home, right? What's a little more in order to save the life of a critter inside? They're able to get the dog named Charlie to safety, continue to hose down the flames. Foster actually made it into the garage and was able to move two canisters of gas away from the fire before also, I guess, somehow managing to get the owner's car out of the garage as well. They brought the side-by-side over. They hooked it up to a winch, and then they actually dragged it out of the garage. So, I mean, pretty quick thinking there. Firefighters arrived on scene a couple minutes later. Spokesperson told First Coast News that the four men credited for preventing the fire from destroying the rest of the home. They stopped the fire from spreading throughout the attic, engulfing the roof, which is pretty incredible. Four guys say they're just running on instinct, so they wanted to help out a neighbor. Bachman says, "We're just doing our part. Glad to do what we could. We're just doing our duties of the neighborhood and just being a nice guy. Nothing special." Well, I mean, listen, I think most of us would like to think we'd do something like that. And most of us probably would, right? If there was a hose nearby, we could pick up the hose, we could direct it at the flames. I think most of us would probably do that. Probably even push in a window to get out a dog that was stuck inside that house. And maybe it was just luck or happenstance that, you know, they had the side-by-sides, they were able to use the winch to drag the car out. But that truly, to me, was going above and beyond. Thinking about, okay, it might have been gas stored somewhere, got to do what we can. I mean, that actually did, I think, require using your noggin. So in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. We thank those four individuals in Jacksonville, Florida, for their very quick thinking and saving the day. Landon Clark, Bryce Foster, Luke Wilson, and Dylan Bachman, thank you for your very good deed. All right, that's going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. I want to thank you for being a part of the program, as always. I'm looking forward to seeing you back here again tomorrow. We've got a couple of irons on the fire here, so I can't tell you who exactly we'll be speaking to, but there's a lot going on around the country, and we're going to be diving into one or more of those topics deeply. Be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. As I'm recording this, we still have not gotten a ruling from the Senate parliamentarian on the NFA language coming out of the Senate Finance Committee, but we do expect that at some point today, and we, of course, will have that covered for you at BearingArms.com. Second Circuit panel considering the New York's gun control laws as well. We'll have a piece about that later this afternoon, so be sure to check out BearingArms.com, and we'll see you back here again tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe. Yes, one more day of saying it. Be cool. Be free.